What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Thursday, April 16th, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the OK Beast Blessing, Adeoye Jr.
What's up, Greg? I got my tea.
I got my coffee.
Oh, look at us. Look at us. What kind of, how many sugar cubes do you have in there?
Zero. Come on, no.
Zero?
I like it like my co-hat. Hold on. Fuck, I fucked it up. Fuck. Ask me again.
How much sugar do you have in your coffee?
Zero. Zero cubes. I like my coffee like I like my co-hosts. Black.
Wow.
Right? Come on. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Now, my question for you is, are you drinking out of a wart pipe?
Oh, no. I wish. It's just a coffee cup that looks this way. I'm not that fancy.
Well, I thought we were going to get it. There's going to be like, you know, Tim's going to throw bones or something when we get home. Because, of course, he's got that one wart pipe he drinks out of all the time.
Yeah.
That's his coffee cup.
Yeah. No, I like that one.
Are we ever going to go back to the studio?
Blessing, you say the word, I'll get you a warp cup.
What was that?
He says he'll give me a warp cup, which, yes, Kevin, I would want one.
All right, I'm on it.
But also, I like that we're at the point where we call the studio home.
I mean, I just miss it. You know what I mean? I miss it really bad.
I miss it too. I miss it so badly. And not that this is going terribly or whatever, but I feel so much more on my game.
Not that this is going terribly.
Yeah. But I feel so off my game because it's one of those things where 100%. Like I'll wake up, get out of my bed, take a shower. But for some reason, I feel like I'm still like just fresh out of bed. I don't feel as on as I am in the studio.
100%.
Are you guys still taking showers?
Yeah. Sorry, Kev. Yeah. Sorry.
Whoa. Yeah. Why?
Because I want to stink otherwise. I'm a big stinky if I don't. But it's also
the feeling thing.
Yeah, it's the feeling thing. It's this thing. You have to have some kind of routine right now, right? But I'm with you. Of like, I'm wearing basketball shorts and socks, no socks all the time. It's like, it doesn't feel like you're going.
Yeah.
And then there's even though it's not the exact same and it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be, like the delays we do have between each other, you know what I mean? Like the little things of doing a podcast, it's just not the same as being in the room, being able to look over there and see what Kevin's eating.
Every now and then you'll have like somebody cut out and it's like, all right, sweet. I'm going to guess that I know what they
did. Exactly. I'm going to fill that in. It was something horrible Nick was going to say. Yeah.
Exactly. My next question was going to be like, what kind of pants are you wearing? But you just said you're wearing sweatpants or you're wearing shorts. Like
I wear Mizzou shorts every day now. Yeah.
Oh, and no, and no socks.
No, because the problem is like I have such a, you know this in general because you, of course, kind of funny best friend before you worked here. Then you've worked with me now and you've seen that I'm just disgusting. I have such a problem regulating heat. That if I put on the socks early on when I was wearing socks, I was just sweating even more in here because this chair doesn't breathe the right way, I don't think. And then also I'm just way overweight and that's a big problem.
Yeah, I too am sockless right now, barefoot. And then, yeah, I'm wearing gray sweatpants. And so
let me see him get up there and show me these sweatpants.
I mean, people have seen my sweatpants before.
I know, like, but it's fun every day. You know what I mean? Let's just see the new stains.
That's what I'm rocking. All right, now let's see the underwear. You know what I mean?
Slowly. Ladies and gentlemen.
I just want to address that. You remember when we started this call and you were like, oh, I'll reposition. I was like, no, it's fine. I'm in the middle. This is where I'm supposed to be. Somehow, between then and going live, I switched over to the right side on my screen.
Yeah.
And that's why we started with the infinite window.
No, I didn't even notice. You know what I mean? And trust me, at this point, how do you feel now? How do you feel now, you little fuck faces watching this content? You wanted the garbage truck on fire again and you're getting it. And it's just, there's no stop to it. Is this what you wanted? This is the kind of content you wanted again? You fucking wanted fucking Portillo?
Oh,
and dancing on me the whole show?
Where did he come from?
He's in my lap.
Oh, was he in your lap this whole time?
When you guys were like, are you further back from the microphone? And I said, I'm about a Portillo's length. I wasn't joking. Like, there's a buffer. It's like bumper bowling down here.
It looked like you just pulled him out of like thin air. That was awesome.
Sorry?
I brought my dog up too.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Hold on. Let me do it because I have to bring you all the way to full screen so I can see it. There he is. All right.
Oh, he's adorable.
He's just had a great.
Oh, my God.
He's like your uncle.
Oh, you want to? Are they meeting for the first time on this?
No, he's not focused enough. He's not going to. Look at Portillo. And this. There it is. Look at Portillo.
This is the most precious thing I've ever experienced.
Look
in my
at Portillo. No, he's not interested.
Oh, yeah, one day.
They're going to be friends. They're going to be friends.
Oh yeah, they're gonna be something. All right,
I'm gonna go.
Sit in your lap and ignore him the entire time. Your dog will desperately want. You know enough about this. Let's talk about video games. Stuff like Jason Schreier leaving Kotaku, PlayStation 5 having a new price window, and more. Because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily. each and every weekday on a variety of platforms. We run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. You can give us your questions, comments, concerns, everything under the video game sun, including your squad up requests, including you getting the show ad-free, including the post show we do each and every weekday. However, if you know big blah, 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 no bucks to toss our way, you can head over to You can watch it live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. If you're watching live, you have a special job, kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. When Portilla gets involved in the intros, it screws me up.
Yeah. Patreon.com/kindoffunnygames if you want to toss us a buck.
I just did the whole thing about it.
Oh, did you do? Okay. I thought you were going into that.
No, but I thought I did all that, because I talked about getting the show ad-free and all that jazz.
Oh, you know what? You probably did.
Man, we're fucking high.
Working from home, man.
Maybe we should start it with a shot of bourbon every day. You know what I mean? Then, of course, you can get it later. YouTube.com/kindoffunnygames. RoosterTeeth.com. Podcast services around the globe each and every weekday. Housekeeping for you. Today, we are doing the next installment of Nick Scarpino Plays The Last of Us for the first time. This is part three. This will be ours, 7, 8, and 9 for Nick playing The Last of Us for the first time ever. Yeah. You can, of course, watch live, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We're kicking off at 2 p.m. Pacific time. If you're somebody who's like, wait, I missed parts 1 and 2 and I want to watch it, don't worry. This is getting put together as one giant YouTube video that'll go up on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Mohammed, a.k.a. Momo, Al Tribesman, The Predator, and Blackjack. Today, we're brought to you by Hims and Quip, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. 3 items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen.
And I know what you're thinking. 3 items, slow news day. No, yesterday, as many of you pointed out in the chat live, yesterday was a slow news day. Today, there's a lot of news, and it's gigantic pieces of news. So let's get into it. Number one, blessing Eddie Oye Jr. The impossible has happened.
Oh,
Jason Schreier, number one video games journalist, is leaving
after Kotaku.
No, we're not going to do the jokes today. All right, we're not going to do the jokes.
It's a serious day today.
So I'll start with Jason's letter that he put up on Kotaku. I edited it for length, so you should go over to Kotaku, obviously, say goodbye to Jason. You should go over to his Twitter, follow him there and all that jazz. You should watch him on We Have Cool Friends Monday, youtube.com/kindoffunny, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. However, here's some pieces from Jason's letter. After 8 years and some change, I'm leaving Kotaku. Friday will be my last day working for this website. I will miss you all. Truth is, I've decided to leave the media and pursue my life's calling, becoming a full-time saxophone player. Kidding, I'm staying in journalism, where I will continue to report on the weird, wild industry and culture of video games. I plan to take a few weeks off to put the final touches on my second book and hang out with my 7-month-old. And then I'll be doing brand new things at a brand new outlet. If you'd like to reach out to share a story, you can find me on Twitter or email me anytime. I'll still be podcasting with my good friends, Kirk Hamilton and Maddie Myers, although we'll no longer be hosting Kotaku Split Screen. We're starting a brand new video game podcast that you can learn about on Twitter. I don't think it'd be productive to spend too much time on the reasons I'm leaving, which will be obvious, other than to say this. Now, when he said will be obvious, he linked to the whole thing about like the Deadspin and how that fucking whole debacle happened. I'm leaving, which will probably be obvious, other than to say this. When I think about what happened to Deadspin, bile builds in my throat. After October 29th, 2019, it became clear to me that I could not work at this company for much longer. What I've always loved about this website is that thanks to the spirit of Gawker Media, it's never been afraid to be simultaneously serious and dumb. Put another way, I'm glad that my final 2 articles here were, number one, a month-long report into how work conditions at a video game company have improved as a result of public pressure, and number two, this, which was one of his goofy stories. Here's something remarkable. Over 8+ years at Kotaku, I've never once been told not to write something because an advertiser might pull out, or because it pissed off a video game company, or because it might upset the wrong people. The story always came first. Serving readers always came first. I'm grateful to all the sources who have spoken to me over the past 8 years, some confidentially, sharing things they thought should be made public, or speaking out about workplace conditions, which takes serious guts, and others on the record, telling stories about everything from randomizing Zelda to translating an old Final Fantasy game. My job has always been to inform and entertain people, and that would not be possible without those who have shared their stories. I'm also grateful to everyone who has read and supported us over the past 8 years. As a journalist, it's easy to fall into the trap of believing your work is beyond reproach. But the truth is that comments, corrections, and feedback are what make us all better. I've had so many great interactions with Kotaku readers over the past year, over the years, whether it was in our comments section, parentheses back when it worked, or Twitter, I'm sorry, on Twitter or email, or even in real life at events like PAX and E3. I hope you'll all continue following my work and staying in touch and calling me out when I'm full of it. Love you, Kotaku. Deadspin forever. Press sneak fuck out. Now, Jason's letter, as it should be, to Kotaku is saying goodbye to Kotaku. What I found interesting is that after Jason put up his tweet linking to this and talking about the new podcast and stuff, and actually when I read through the next one, Bless, can you go to his Twitter real quick and find out what the new podcast is called?
It's called Triple Click.
Okay, thank you. Yes. Everybody follow, like, subscribe, share. He also retweeted this. It's an interview Gene Park over at the Washington Post did with Jason about it. So now I'm going to read that article, which gets more into why he's leaving and what we're talking about with this Deadspin and Go Media stuff, if you didn't know. Jason Schreier, a journalist known in the video game industry for covering working conditions inside tight-lipped game development studios, announced his resignation from the video game news site Kotaku on Thursday, citing dissatisfaction with the ownership and direction of parent company Go Media. Schreier, who will soon take a position with another company he declined to detail, is the latest of several Kotaku employees to depart the company while invoking Go as the predominant reason. Kotaku has been owned and operated by private equity-backed Go Media since 2019 when it was sold by Univision, along with other sites formerly under the Gawker banner. The site network, which includes Gizmodo and The Onion, as well as the now-defunct Splinter, to name a few, has gone through a series of tumultuous ownerships and business changes, most notably after the landmark Hulk Hogan invasion of privacy lawsuit that shut down its original ownership in 2016. Quote, I've been through a lot with this company. Since 2012, we've been through a whole lot of management shifts and resignations and firings and drama, Schreier told the Post. I've been through a lot of cataclysmic shifts because it always felt like, through it all, we were guided by people who always cared about journalism. And, unfortunately, I'm not sure that's the case anymore, end quote. High-profile resignations have plagued Go Media in the last year. The company's staff has publicly clashed with ownership over how to run its sites. Last summer, Deadspin lost its top editor, Megan Greenwell, over the disagreements, and eventually its entire editorial staff departed or was fired. Schreier, 32, said his breaking point was when Deadspin fired senior editor Barry Pachesky for disagreeing with a management mandate to, quote, stick to sports, which angered journalists on staff who had cultivated a reputation for aggressive, off-color reporting and eccentric commentary. They argue it would betray the online readership and community bore out of their past work. Schreier wasn't the only editor to leave Go Media this week. Just Wednesday, Gizmodo editor-in-chief Kelly Bordet announced she was resigning. Excuse me. He is also only the latest in a series of high-profile departures from Kotaku. In December, award-winning reporter Cecilia D'Anastasio, right? I can never say her last name well because I'm an idiot.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Anastasio, I believe. Now at Wired, wrote a farewell piece taking shots at Go Media's past decisions, including the dissolution of Kotaku's investigative reporting unit. Reporters Gita Jackson and Joshua Riviera also resigned in January, saying the new management made it impossible for us to work here. That was a quote. In a statement to the Post, a Go Media spokesperson said, quote, we thank Jason for his contributions to Kotaku and wish him well in his next venture, end quote. Schreier said he's encouraged by how much games journalism this is jumping up in Gene's article, by the way. Schreier said he's encouraged by how much games journalism has evolved, giving nods to longtime sites like IGN and GameSpot. Quote, I watched a lot of growth and evolution over the years, and I've been really encouraged, he said. I see a lot more gaming sites be more willing to rock the boat when it comes to game publishers and the people we cover. You see a lot less of the puffery that was prevalent 20, 25 years ago, end quote. Schreier said his biggest concern about the industry going forward was the lack of money flowing to games media sites, many of which are reliant on freelance writers. Quote, I wish there were more money in the field to be doing the kind of reporting work that I think is really essential to keeping the gaming industry healthy, and that the people in power in games are held accountable, Schreier said. Blessing, I've talked for a long, 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 long time there.
You have. You did a good job.
What is your reaction on this?
Good for him. Like, from the whole Go Media stuff that's been going on for a while, but that really blew up late last year with the Deadspin situation. Like, I totally understand why Jason would want to leave. Yeah. And really, like, this is mainly on Go Media for mistreating their workers, right? Like, this is what happens. You lose Jason Schreier, who is, like, one of the best in the business right now at doing what he does, right? Like he
mentioned, I would say I'm just interrupt. Are you the best?
The best. Yeah.
The gold standard for right now from when we say, ah, man, there is no video game journalist. It always, except for Jason and Patrick. And like, you know, you go down this list and I'm not taking a shot at Patrick. Obviously I love him too.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, you know, it was cited in his goodbye letter, right? He was the one who just broke the big old Naughty Dog story that went up on Kotaku this last month, right? And he's been breaking stories that are similar over the last few years, and he's been doing a great job doing that, right? Like he's been the guy who has been allowing gamers and the wider audience to have a more inside look into the culture of video game studios and understanding what that culture looks like.
Yeah.
And in a way that's actually been enacting change. Like there was a story 100%. I saw.
You talk about it, like he's the one who wrote about the Rockstar conditions, right? And then this, like he puts in his statement, right? This week I guess yesterday, right? Is that when we talked
about it? I knew it was either this morning or yesterday.
I think me and Witta talked about this yesterday where I was actually talking about how, we'll get to that in a second, that Jason is synonymous with Kotaku to me. I think that's what drives people to Kotaku. To have that, not only because I mean, that's the thing is, I know that, like, for sure, as we sit here and talk about Jason leaving, Jason is a polarizing figure for so many people. Where I think, you know, I look at him as the gold standard for what video game journalism is, right? In terms of somebody who is out there trying to tell these stories and trying to put trying to put real world values to it, right? Trying to take our entertainment goofy medium where you and I just want to talk about if this game's good or bad and actually tell the human stories of it, right? Give it gravitas, I guess. But I also know that plenty of developers that I know, people who work at studios, aren't the biggest fan of him. And then there is this push and pull of people who are and aren't, or that because they feel like he didn't report fairly on their studios, or some think he did. And
yeah.
Like, it's obviously...
That's part of the game, too.
Exactly, right? Like, that's how I was at the Columbia Daily Tribune. People really didn't like me because of the way I reported on the Columbia Housing Authority, right? Like, that is something that actually happens. And I think even if you don't like it and you're not happy with the report, you have to respect the fact that he's there to do that. And he's out there rattling those cages and doing those things.
Yeah, like, you got to respect that he's out there reporting on pretty much everything as it's happening. Like, I feel like I'd love to know the percentage of game, like big game delays that happened, but that Jason Schreier was like there the night before or hours before talking about being like, hey, look out for the Last of Us 2 delay. He didn't say that verbatim, but I think before the Last of Us 2 delay, he did say something along the lines of like, get ready, because some delays are happening, right? Like that happens all the time with Jason Schreier, because Jason Schreier has those connections and he has like, he's built up such a good, a good system of insiders and people to talk to and knowledge and contacts over the last however many years he's been doing this, that, he is the best in the game right now. So the fact that Go Media and Kotaku are losing him, like, that's a loss for them. Like, I'm curious to see how Kotaku moves going forward in terms of what their big pieces of content are, because they're without Jason, you're missing out on a lot of those big scoops that I think make Kotaku valuable, that I think make Kotaku what it is. And of course, like, there's still talented people at Kotaku.
Of course,
like,
I don't take away from them at all.
But Jason Schreier is Jason Schreier.
I don't know if you got to listen yesterday, because I think this is all tied into the EGM stuff too. Did you hear episode yesterday, right? Where me and Gary talked about, you know, EGM coming out and making this big post about how, like, the features that were key to our relaunch last year, we're stopping doing because we just can't keep going that way. And that sucks. And we're worried. And the post, it wasn't that EGM was closing down, but it also made it sound like we don't know what the future of EGM is going to be. I think this is why Jason came up yesterday when I was talking about this, is that I feel like when you have a tentpole personality who's doing something that's different in the industry, or at least doing it better than most in the industry, you have a reason to go there and have them be that. And with Jason leaving, it does get interesting of, don't get me wrong, Steven's doing great stuff over there. Mike does cool stuff over there. Like, there's cool things happening on Kotaku. I'm not trying to take shots at Kotaku, but I do wonder then, what is the big driver to get people to Kotaku.com? Because for me, outside of the show where they do the amazing job of having the best roundup of what comes out every day for me to go in there and check on, like, I was mostly sourcing Kotaku for stuff like this, where I'd be going over there and finding it. And then I just read Jason's article and then see some other thing, click on it and be like, oh, this is news. And then Kotaku gets in the report that way. Whereas as you start losing your main draw to something, why are you going to that site? And why wouldn't I just get whatever I clicked on Kotaku from IGN, from GameSpot, whatever? And that's not to say that everybody's doing the exact same things, but a lot of times the things that would apply to this show would be there.
Yeah, and I think Jason is a big part of what made Kotaku special, right? Like having him there and having him be the one to break stories, like the Rockstar thing, like the Naughty Dog thing, you know, like the whole Visceral Games, or yeah, Visceral Games,
yeah, with Amy and everything,
right? Laying out that whole story, be the one to really dig in. I think he also did Telltale, right? Like he did a whole story on. I believe he did a whole story.
Kotaku did. Maybe. I forget who wrote it. And I don't want to credit him. I don't want to credit every amazing thing there because it's like, you motherfuckers. no, you did great stuff too.
But like a lot of the big great stories that come out of Kotaku are Jason, right? And and like once again, I don't want to throw shade at Kotaku. I do want to throw shade at Go Media because they're the ones They're the ones that like they're the reason why Jason is leaving. And
it's interesting. It's interesting, and I'm not trying to, you know, things take time. It's interesting that it's taken this long, because I remember talking about it on this show where when Dead Space got everybody left or fired and all, you know, how that all went down. And then it was they put in those autoplay ads in every one of the Go Media sites, put up their things being like, hey, we hate these too, so email our boss at this thing. And all of those got taken off the sites without the editors actually taking the articles down. Like a third party came in and took all those fucking things down. That would have been. And I'm talking out my ass here, obviously, but that would have been for me the moment of like, I got to get the fuck out of here. And clearly that's what is happening. But I'm surprised that day it wasn't like, cool, we all quit. But I'm talking in a fictional world where you don't have to worry about paying your rent and figuring out.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, right? Like, for video games media and video games journalism, especially, like, I wonder if it's just a thing of like, there's not that many options out there. Like, I imagine for what Kind of Funny does, right? For Greg Miller and the team, like piecing out from IGN, you guys already have a built-in audience that you could count on to be there with Kind of Funny because you guys have specialized in this particular thing, right? I feel like doing that similar thing, but with video games journalism is probably like way more difficult because it's harder to get people's eyes on that type of written content, especially if you're not churning that stuff out, right? Like if you have like a big expose like once a month, is that enough to keep people invested in a site that specializes in that thing?
Well, now you stumble into something interesting. The 5-star man wrote in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can, and says, hey, KFGD crew, with Jason Schreier announcing his departure from Kotaku, where do you think Jason goes next? He mentioned in his goodbye letter that some of the favorite things he has gotten to do were only possible to place like Kotaku. Do you think there is a chance the, quote, news outlet he is set to begin with could be him starting his own company like Kind of Funny did? Or something like, or would something like that even be possible? Either way, I'm excited to see what comes next for him when he returns. Thanks for all you do, especially now. What's Jason's next move? Blessing at AOU Jr.
I think there's a few options. Like Vice Gaming is the one I jumped to immediately.
Yeah,
because I feel like his voice would fit well there with Patrick, with Austin. Polygon also comes to mind, but I don't know if that's like those are the two sites that immediately come to mind as far as where Jason's voice would probably fit in terms of the type of reporting he does.
Yeah,
but in his quote here, right, or in his letter here, he says, "I'll be doing brand new things at a brand new outlet." Like, does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Does that then mean like brand new to create something?
Is that a brand new from scratch.com, whatever you're gonna call it, Patreon? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I wonder, like, the fact that it's not like a mass exodus from Kotaku makes me wonder, is he gonna start something with just other journalists that may, like, I don't know, man, that may have their work not able to go up from whatchamacallit, the news story that we were talking about yesterday. EGM, right? Like, is he teaming up with some EGM reporters? Is he gonna do something on his own? Like, that doesn't seem, I feel like that doesn't seem as feasible or as, like, I don't necessarily see that as something that Jason would want to do, like start his own company in order to do his own journalism. But like, who knows? Like, the world of the internet right now, like, you have the option to like go about doing something by yourself. Like, Jason could start a Patreon, and I imagine it probably could be a very successful Patreon, but
yeah,
I'm curious if that is the route he would want to go.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I don't see that, because I feel like that would be so hard. I mean, again, maybe I'm thinking of it too small, because you're talking about him starting his own Patreon, like a one-man show, right? Where then it gets weird, because sometimes I'm sure that, how much is he and his audience going to hold him to actually writing stuff? because there's obviously stuff where he's going to be on month-long investigations where he's working on something big. So is he then just making things to make things, at which point people are like, why am I paying for this? Then I thought it was interesting, right, because I've been doing brand new things at a brand new outlet. If it's just new to him, you know, he had just done a New York Times piece not too long ago this month, right? Yeah, like a week ago, April 4th is what I have here. But and even there, they call them, you know, the byline was it's an opinion piece, but by Jason Schreier. Mr. Schreier is the author of Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, the triumphant and turbulent stories behind how video games are made. No mention of Kotaku, at least in his little byline there. I didn't read the period. I just saw his tweet that he did one. I was like, maybe that's a sign he's going there. But I think the fact that he's talking in his goodbye letter about how amazing it's been at Kotaku to do something totally serious and then totally goofy. Is that something you want to give up? Because I don't think the New York Times is going to be down for the goofy shit. But maybe you want to go down and double down on that. Can we read into the fact that, you know, Gene Park seems to have the exclusive here from the Washington Post that, you know, they've been, what do they call, what's the Post call their new thing? Their gaming thing has a name, not Pixel.
Washington. Yeah, Post. I can't gaming. Think of what that is.
They called it something. The video gaming Washington Post. Oh, nanobiologist is shouting launcher. Launcher is what he's saying.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds right. It's a goofy thing. Of course.
Is it like launcher in... without an E or something?
I don't know. Who the hell knows? All I know is when you put in Washington Post video games, it just brings you to WashingtonPost.com and it just says video gaming at the top. And then there's all these articles. So, yeah. Oh, there it is. Launcher. Yeah. Video game news and analysis. Tips to help you win. Like, that could be an interesting fit. You know what I mean? Because, I don't know how goofy the Washington Post gets. But again, to... whatever his contract or whatever be, if you wanted to do the goofy stuff, you can have a blog, you can have it wherever, you can have a Patreon there where you're giving insight behind the scenes on what you're doing, right?
Yeah, and like, so the launcher was introduced, looks like, in October of last year, right? And so still fairly young. And so like, if you bring in like a Jason Schreier to come through, Jason Schreier can help mold like what that looks like, can help mold like the voice of it and what that is going forward. Similar to like Austin Walker and Waypoint, though Austin Walker was there from the ground floor. But I'm curious if like that, if that could be the move for him, if they give him like a very like high up position at launcher. But I don't know how all that works.
Yeah, I mean, you know, oh, there it is. I was like, somebody went to launcher we kind of knew, right? And it was Elise Favis, formerly of Game Informer. Yeah, I don't know. Part of me wants to see it do a them do their own version of Kinda Funny, of what that would look, you know, and I say that just because it does. Easy Ally, you know, Kinda Funny, Easy Allies, Min Max, whoever, right? Noclip. What would it be like? What is the content you could create with a team behind you, right? And like other people who are doing it, and is it a site? Is it just a Patreon? Is it video stuff? Like, I've always thought that'd be interesting from Jason. But yeah, it's a brave new world here for video game journalism, for Jason, for Kotaku, for sure. Like, there's a bunch of questions, not to mention the fucking timing of this, right? Of giving up your secure job where you're the best in the business and having everything established during this pandemic, coronavirus going, this thing. Because, you know, we've talked about it a lot, and I continue to say it. I think maybe just to stress how much creators need you and your help, everybody who's listening or watching. But like, when this is all done, the .coms and the Patreons and all the other podcasts you used to listen to, some of them aren't going to be there anymore. Like, as people get more conservative with their money, take back pledges, as advertisers get more conservative, take back their dollars for that, as people's resources and time management shift to things that are more important, like, it's going to be interesting to see who's standing when this is all over. And so even for something like, you know, we always, this is jumping around columns here, but like, you look at like the XFL or even WWE, who just had layoffs, in the XFL, who just filed for bankruptcy, right? But yeah. XFL, you know, for all intents and purposes, seemed like they had it together this time. Seems like they had a good start to the season. Like, they had it all, like they were in a great place. But then something completely out of the blue comes along and fucks them like this, right? And I'm not at all throwing shade or saying anything like this, but like, I think something like launcher is in that same boat, where it's like, it's launched with the best intentions. It's doing great because you know you're investing time and money into this to get it going, to build it up, to do the thing, right? But as the Washington Post decides, man, we got to start tightening our belts. You know, subscribership's down. This is down. Advertising's down. Where do you start cutting things back? Now we're back to the conversation of layoffs at WWE. You start seeing that contract, right? And so
yeah,
that is the thing of if Jason's going somewhere else, that's awesome and great, but I hope it all works out. And obviously, who knows? No one knows what's going to happen day to day anywhere anymore. But
yeah, I'm very excited to see where he goes. Like, no matter where it is, like, I think he, like, one, the fact that he's out, good on him. Like, I'm happy for him. But then also, like, somebody's going to be getting, like, a really good get with Jason Schreier.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Whoever it is. And so, however that shakes out, I'm very, very curious to see.
Me too. Blessing. Eddie Oye. Junior, drinking out of your warm pipe. That isn't... So, it's just a tall green cup?
It's just a tall green cup with that it, I understand why it looks like a wart pipe.
Like, and to my fact, credit,
I probably could have gotten away with saying it's a wart
pipe. Because it looks like, well, you would have said yes, and then I would have said it looks like a knockoff wart pipe. So, I mean, it's not perfect, yeah. But it's like close enough on a video game show.
For sure. No,
number two on the Roper Report. It looks like PlayStation 5 consoles are going to be limited like we were talking about and worrying about. This comes from Bloomberg's Takashi Mochizuki and Yuki Furukawa. Sony Corp plans to produce far fewer units of its upcoming PlayStation 5 in its first year than it had for the previous generation console's launch, according to people familiar with the matter. The Tokyo-based tech giant is limiting its initial production run in part because it expects the PS5's ambitious specs to weigh on demand by leading to a higher price at launch, the people said, asking not to be identified because the subject is private. The global COVID-19 pandemic has affected Sony's promotional plans for the new device, but not its production capacity, they added. The company has told assembly partners it would make 5 to 6 million units of the PlayStation 5 in the fiscal year ending March 2021, according to other people involved with the machine's supply chain. When Sony released the PlayStation 4 in November 2013, it sold 7.5 million units in its first two quarters. So again, 5 to 6 million for PS5, whereas PlayStation's first two quarters for PS4 were 7.5 million units. The PS5's loftier price tag may also deter initial take-up. Game developers who've been creating titles for the next PlayStation anticipate its price to be in the region of $499 to $549. $499 to $549. And Bloomberg Intelligence's Matthew Canterman points to increased component costs pushing up the price required for Sony to break even. Sony has struggled with its price-setting decision for the PlayStation 5 because of scarce components, Bloomberg News has reported. A Sony spokesperson declined to comment. Its shares were largely unchanged in afternoon trade. The PS5 production volume could change depending on the COVID-19 situation, the people said. Sony has asked employees to work from home to mitigate the spread of the virus, and its board has been unable to meet to approve business plans for the current fiscal year, including those for the PlayStation unit. That meeting was originally scheduled to take place in March. Sony said last month that it plans to release the results of the year ended March on April 30th, but may be forced to push that date back due to the pandemic. The virus has already upended Sony's promotional plans. Ding, ding, ding. Here's some interesting stuff. The company may forego hosting a public press conference for its PS5 release date and price unveiling due to infection fears. Recently, it was forced to reveal its DualSense PS5 controller in a hurried fashion, according to people informed on the matter. While only a small circle within Sony are privy to the appearance of the PlayStation 5 console, the controller has been shared with outside developers and the company feared it couldn't control leaks, they said. Which is what I fucking called, Blessing.
Yeah, that's one thing that I feel like we didn't talk much about is what, like, we talked all about the controller and all about the features of the controller and how we felt and all that stuff, but we didn't really talk much about the nature of how they revealed it. And this makes a lot of sense, even though, like, coming off of the Wired articles and how PlayStation has been doing their PS5 rollout, I feel like the controller being revealed in just a blog on PS Blog, like, that's, it didn't come as a shocker, but this added context, I feel like, just makes a lot of sense, right? Developers are getting the controller. You can't really control.
I called this.
Yeah.
Games Daily, man. I was on top of it. Just because you weren't on the show didn't mean it didn't happen, Bless.
You think I listen to the show when I'm not on?
No, of course not.
This show only exists when I'm here. But yeah, no, that makes sense. You did call it, Greg. And so good job on that.
Thank you very much. Also, do you want to take a moment from PS I Love You XO to explain that we understand that the controller triggers are not the exact same on the Xbox?
Wait, are they?
There was a group in the chat in the comments that were ready to drag us through the streets and tar and feather us for it. I'm like, no, I understand. I spoke quickly and loosely on it. I'm saying I don't care in the same way I don't care about the Rumble and Xbox's triggers. I digress. We'll get back to that next week. Don't worry about it.
Gotcha.
So, Sony remains unlikely to delay the launch of the PS5 from the critical year-end shopping season. So long as arch rival Microsoft Corp doesn't push back the release of its next generation Xbox, also expected at the end of the year. Sony won't delay either, the people said. Some analysts believe the close contest for attention between the PlayStation and Xbox, especially in the US, may force both companies to sell their new consoles at a loss. Quote, I think both the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X may end up at $450, even though they would lose money at that price, said Damien Thong, an analyst at Macquarie Capital. Suppliers have started delivering components to PlayStation 5 assemblers who are scheduled to begin mass producing the product by June. Sony's PlayStation chief, Jim Ryan, has stressed that the machine's launch should be simultaneous around the globe, according to people in the company's supply chain. Blessing, I talked a long time on that one, too. Big old meaty stories today.
There's a lot here, but I think this is further confirmation that, yeah, the PS5 is likely going to be $500. I know in the story they say like 500 to 550. They say 499 to
yeah, 499 to 525, right?
Yeah.
No, but sorry, like 499 to 549.
Yeah. I imagine it'll come out to 500 cuz I don't think they're going to want to have that halfway point, even though I know this is like it seems like overall this is just a weird time for them in terms of manufacturing, in terms of where the parts are shaking out at, in terms of the manufacturing cost plus the shortages. Like, yeah, like that strikes me as interesting, but yeah, that tells me that it's gonna be $500. The whole delaying thing, right? But like them not delaying the PS5 because until like Microsoft delays the Xbox Series X, like that being kind of the decision they're making right now, I think also makes sense. Like I kind of understand that. But yeah, like I don't know. This all seems expected. This is just more added context to kind of what we've already known. That's kind of where I'm at.
Well, that's the nicest thing about it, is to see. And granted, these are unnamed sources and who knows, yada yada yada. But it's interesting to finally hear from the inside what we've been saying from the outside. Right? Number one, about the controller, that's awesome or whatever. But then the fact of, no, it will still launch this year. There'll just be fewer amounts. Now, it's interesting that the fewer PlayStation 5s being made for the fiscal year really come down to component costs and not so much in supply chain versus COVID, right? It wasn't that, even though there's parts to that and there's a back and forth about that. Like, COVID's involved, but it's not the main problem, I guess, is what's interesting about that.
How do you feel about the idea that we'll probably have like a Nintendo Wii situation with the PS5, with like how many they're manufacturing versus how many like PS4s they manufactured? And
dude, I feel like you're gonna have that regardless, right? Like for console launches, for the most part, right? And I'm talking about like the first couple weeks, right? It seems like they're always hard to get your hands on. It's rare that you're like, oh man, I didn't get this, maybe I'll walk into even the Wii U headlines I remember to get the Wii U, and like that I feel like is going to happen regardless. And I think what's interesting about this is we start to talk about these premium price points, right, of $500. It then becomes a question of two, like, how do you launch something that is a entertainment device, but I mean, really a frivolous purchase, right? Like, how do you do something that's usually you'd save your, fuck it money for, but you're launching it on the heels of, or in still not in the middle, but in a pandemic, right?
Yeah.
Where people are so worried. I mean, how many people are laid off? How many people are cutting costs here and there? Like, I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not saying they're not going to sell out. I'm not saying any of that. But I mean, I think the lowered supply of them, having, 2 million less units than you had for the PlayStation 4, while on paper, I'm sure PlayStation wants as many out as possible. They want to make as much money as possible. It isn't a bad gamble to make them scarce and have it be driven up, because there's people like us that are going to, all right, cool. Like, it's rough right now and I'm not sure what's going on, but I'm fucking going to save my money for this PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
I'm going to make sure I can get a PlayStation 5 on launch. So
like PS5 is like essential for.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing is like, your money's worth what your money's worth to you. And so like putting that aside, and that's going to be your, reward, or that's going to be your bright spot or your Christmas in all of this. I think there's definitely enough people that are going to do that and get to that point where they are ready to do it. But I don't think it's going to have the same, hey, my best friend comes over and looks at it and is like, oh yeah, you know what? I want to go drop that today too. Like, That will happen. I think it'll be more of when times change, or maybe next year or whatever, when I get my job back, I'm not on unemployment, when I'm not, you know, struggling to get enough hours at wherever I'm working or something, maybe it'll be something to that effect.
Given what we know, where we're at, given what we know right now with the PS5 manufacturing and the PS5 in general, do you think the PS5 ends up outselling PS4 when it's all said and done? Because it seems like starting off, it's not like in the first year, it's not going to outsell the PS4's first year.
I don't think right now, taking a guess, and obviously we're taking a stab at something, not knowing what it's going to look like, how it's going to go.
Not even knowing the games or anything.
Right, exactly. I would say no, because I do think it's going to have a much slower start, and then it'll be harder to pick up that momentum as you go. And again, I think even once we get out of this and we're back to being able to go to the movie theaters and restaurants and everything else, I think this will hang on so many people's heads that I do think that they're going to change their buying habits to some degree. And I'm not, because again, like, video games are going to be around and consoles are going to sell. And I imagine PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X are going to sell fine too and do all these different things. But we're going to be in a new world in the same way. And I'm not trying to be alarmist at all, because this is an alarming thing. I think it's just the truth of, like, you know, there's a, in my life, in my timeline, in my head, there's a definitive moment of what was before 9/11 and after 9/11. And I don't mean, I don't mean like terrorism and this and like fear. I just mean the fact of, like, everything this drastically is like a world changed. Event.
Like we're living history, essentially.
Exactly. And so, right? When we come out of this, it's going to be different. And I think just the fact that it's going to be different on that level means that this next generation console, because I'm applying this to, I keep saying frivolous. That's not what I mean, though. Entertainment spending. Kevin, what's the word I'm looking for? Non-essential spending, right? Okay, we'll say that. Non-essential spending is, I think it's going to be a different ball of wax on how you do that, because it's going to be during this time, people have eaten into their savings, people are in credit card debt, people are into all these different things. You figure, like, while there's always people who are having trouble, like, I would definitely say this PlayStation 4 console generation has happened at a time when the economy's booming, right? Or to some extent where it seems like everybody's doing well, where it did, I mean, like,
things are bouncing back a bit. Yeah,
you were, it's like, you know, I mean, and it was this idea that, you know, like, because I keep applying it to us and what it is. I mean, right when we come out of this, like, and smaller people who are on YouTube have stopped making YouTube videos, are people still going to think that they can bootstrap it and go to Patreon and make their own business? Like, is that still a thought? You know what I mean? Like, is it still a thing that people, or is it going to be a snap back to, now I want benefits and I want this? Or is it going to be that since people had lost that and seen that they, I don't know. We're talking about high level economics here and sociology that I don't fucking understand.
I mean, to the basic of it, income, right? Like, people have less disposable income are going to have less disposable income and already do have less disposable income to work with, right? Like, the amount, and I don't mean to be doom and gloom. And I know we talk about COVID literally every single day at this point, but like the amount of people I've seen in my, everybody does. It's the worst because it's just so depressing. But the amount of people I've seen on my timeline that have lost their job, like, that alone is going to speak to how we see people spending over the next few years, if not over the next, like, decade.
And that's, I mean, again, and I always lead with this, so everybody don't panic. Kind of Funny is fine. We're doing fine. Everything's okay. But for us, like, when you go to Patreon and as us and look in our Patreon, you everybody has an exit survey for why they leave. And you open it, and most of them are blank because people just do it. But then there's so many that are got laid off, coronavirus, got laid off. Like, it's like clear, like, granted, we're, you know, you're giving us a dollar. So maybe you're taking that dollar away to make sure you can put it away to, I think, pay rent, save, do food, yada, yada, yada. But if, also, if you're taking it to put into your PlayStation 5 fund, I totally get. Like, I understand,
like, you understand
how this all shakes out. But how many other people are like, well, you know what? I'm gonna ride the PlayStation for another year or two. Like, because it is that thing of, especially for a launch of any console, for the most part, but especially for something that's backwards compatible, right? Like, it's going to be cool and it's going to be awesome and it's going to have a bunch of bells and whistles, but you're still going to have a great experience on the PlayStation 4. It's still going to be how PlayStation 2 still put out God of War 2 after the launch of the PlayStation 3. Like, PlayStation 3 was out, you could have a PlayStation 3 then, but you don't need to. You can still get, you know, an amazing
experience. I think to that point, right, I think this console generation, more than previous ones, more than recent previous ones at least, is going to have so much crossover in terms of games that are cross-gen, games that you can play on either platform. Like, it seems like that's going to last longer this time around in a way that people feel less, to what you're saying, feel less compelled to buy a new console. Because, like, why would I buy a new console when I can just play Cyberpunk on my PS4? Or why buy a new console when I can just play Watch Dogs Legion or whatever, like early next gen game or like next gen game within the first few years, I can just buy on my current console, Halo Infinite.
Exactly. Blessing, you were a peach today and grabbed questions, so because I had to go and run and do something. This nanobiologist one, have we answered? I feel like we might have answered it because we just talked so much about this and all this
stuff. Let's see. Yeah, we pretty much answered this one.
Good. Thank you for writing in as always, Nano, but we answered before. And I see you and you're wrong, giving me good stuff too. So we'll get to you eventually. Number three, though, this one I just called follow-ups. Some quick stuff based on what you've heard on Kind of Funny Games Daily both this week and last. Crysis Remastered is real. This is Joe Screbbles at IGN. Crysis Remastered has been revealed and is, quote, coming soon to PS4, Xbox One, PC, and Nintendo Switch. At the time of writing, heading to the Crysis website's cookie page will show you the Crysis Remastered logo. Clicking on that logo leads you to a new website with new artwork to go with it. The website blurb reads, Crytek's groundbreaking, critically acclaimed first-person shooter is back. Crysis Remastered is coming to PC, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. The game's debut on a Nintendo platform. Borzen.
Awesome.
Double zero in about this, Blessing, and says, good morning, Greg and Blessing. The question that every single person has asked when new hardware is ever shown is now going to get its answer. Yes, it can run Crysis. Crysis is being remastered for everything and is adding new enhancements like better textures and everyone's favorite graphic rendering technology, ray tracing. Now, on the site, it's making it seem like the platforms are getting this ray tracing technology, the Nintendo Switch, and I have... including the Nintendo Switch. And I have to ask, do people reasonably think that the current Switch can handle ray tracing? Nintendo is usually behind the curve on graphics technology, but with ray tracing being a large talking point for next generation, will Nintendo's hand be forced to include ray tracing in a Switch Pro or the Switch 2, as Nintendo has partnered with NVIDIA, the company who is pushing ray tracing on PC? Thanks and stay safe. Borzen 00.
Yeah, the Nintendo Switch is not going to ray trace a thing.
I think can't do that.
To be fair, the website
can't even run Saints Row.
Is it having trouble running Saints Row?
The first one it did, didn't it? Maybe I'm talking on my ass. Kind of funny that conversation. I could have, not the newest one, but the first time.
Okay, gotcha. Because I was gonna, I don't know when the embargo is probably up for Saints Row 4, right? On Switch.
I mean, it got announced, yeah.
Because I got that.
You know, let's just not even. You know, you can Google into that one later if the embargo.
Yeah.
Let's not tempt fate on that one, all right?
Yeah. But like this, so let's back it up a bit. Crysis, yes, is like a very intensive game. It coming to current gen consoles is awesome. It running on current gen consoles, I mean, makes sense because it ran on previous gen consoles, and like this, it running on Switch period isn't like that crazy because Crysis 1 and the other Crysis games were on Xbox 360 and PS3. When it comes to ray tracing, yeah, I do wonder, like, I think they've taken down their page that, like, you could access via the cookies thing.
The cookie thing,
so,
yeah.
And so I can't see. But if they are advertising that it can ray trace on Switch, then that's not good because it won't be able to handle that. Because ray tracing is more of a hardware thing than a software thing. Like, ray tracing is something that you have to have, like, the hardware in order to simulate, which I don't know is the right word, but simulate. hardware that can like simulate ray tracing. Give me a better word if there is one. But yeah, maybe the best they can do is like try and recreate the idea of ray tracing on Switch. Like I'm not a technology person like that. I think
it would miss those textures. It would miss that thing. It would just run.
Yeah,
like, you're applying what would be a low running PC to it, right?
Yeah, like I imagine you take. Like, you look at the versions that are available on 360 and PS3, and the Switch will probably look pretty comparable to those ones, if not, like, slightly better. I don't imagine the Switch version will look anything like the PS4 or Xbox One versions.
Nanobiologist, and you're wrong, gives me a link to the Polygon article about Saints Row the Third Switch impressions. Quote, the results are a mixed bag. The team found that the Switch port approaches parity with the original PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 versions of the game, particularly in 720p resolution in handheld mode. It doesn't fare nearly as well in docked mode, as the 1080p resolution decreases the game's already poor frame rate. So fuck it, I was right. Yeah, man.
Yeah. And Borzen 00, you're wrong, says ray tracing is software, but real-time ray tracing needs hardware to help be accelerated. And so I think, like, we'll see with the Switch version, man. Like, in that
God
case...
God bless him. You know what I mean? Like, The Witcher, right? The Witcher, you know, remember when Witcher 3 came to Switch and we were stoked and then you played it and you're like, okay, cool. There's less textures and it's got like a Vaseline filter on it. Like, there's going to be concessions made.
Yeah. But I was going to say, Crysis is already like an older game at this point. So it's not like it's going to look like Garbo on Switch.
The joke of Can It Run Crysis is from like literally 2009, 2010 when I started. No, yeah. Jesus Christ. 2007, 2008 when I started at IGN. Even then, I was like, all right. And I remember it finally came, I want to say, kindoffunny.com/you're wrong to PS3. And I played it and it was like, oh, all right. This game kind of sucks. I get that it was pretty, but who cares? Who fucking cares? Shut up, everybody. On your follow-ups here, number B, I'm going to say. 3B, we'll call it. We have yet another update on the Cooking Mama drama. Remember yesterday, we finally had our answer, it seemed, that Office Create, the people who own Cooking Mama, had licensed it to Planet Entertainment to get a new game made. They didn't like it and said, don't release it. And Planet Entertainment said, fuck you, we're releasing it. And everybody's like, what? And so then they were like, we're looking to suing people. That's why it got taken down. We did our thing on it, of course. This forced Planet Entertainment's hand. They put out this statement on Twitter. Planet Entertainment wants to explain the mystery surrounding the Nintendo Switch game to all Cooking Mama Cookstar fans. Office Create, the rights holder to Cooking Mama, approved a detailed game design in 2019. First Playable, the game developer, and Planet followed the exact approved design. That design is the exact game on Nintendo Switch, which also includes many additional Office Create suggestions, which add gameplay value. Unfortunately, creative differences arose as Cooking Mama Cookstar was near completion that were outside of the scope of our agreement and the game design approved by Office Create. By contract, Planet is within its full rights to publish Cooking Mama Cookstar. There is no active litigation or ruling that prevents Planet from publishing the game. Cooking Mama fans have been very enthusiastic about Cooking Mama Cookstar, including the many new features, including vegetarian and unicorn food, potluck party, plus more. We appreciate the overwhelming positive response, not true, that is not true, and support from Cooking Mama Cookstar fans. Office Create has our total respect. We thank them for their wisdom and wish them well.
This is like the greatest rat beef of this year so far.
Who would have thought that it would be Cooking Mama Cookstar that would be this drama center?
Like, it's crazy. Because legit, just last week, hold on. Okay, April 5th, which was a couple weeks ago, right?
This was the blockchain one, right? You had it on two consecutive games daily where you talked about it was mysteriously pulled down and people don't know why. Then it was the next day. All right, there's a rumor that it looks like it might have been this thing was farming blockchain.
So I want to point out that one, the Cooking Mama Cookstar Twitter only has 534 followers as of the time we're recording this, which is crazy, right? There's no verification. And I, like, if somebody told me that this is a fake account that was like meant to like spoof Cooking Mama, I would be inclined to believe them. That said, just a couple weeks ago, April 5th, they tweeted this. We know that Cookstar fans are anxiously awaiting for the game to appear in the eShop. As everybody is aware, the whole world is upside down with delays right now. At Planet Entertainment, we are anxious as you are for the digital download to be available. In the meantime, Cooking Mama Cookstar is available in many North American and European retail web stores. That's them implying that this is more of a COVID thing than an active like litigation thing or like a beef with their parent company thing or with the IP owner kind of thing. And so like they've already like I'm not one to take sides in corporate beef, but like I don't know, man. Planet Entertainment has kind of lost my trust here with like the conflict with the conflicting.
This is the statements. Final straw for blessing.
This is the one that broke the camel's back. This is funny though. This is.
It's such a
so
weird
fascinating nightmare. That is Cooking Mama. It's so weird, but like, I'm enjoying the back and forth so much, and
I appreciate again that I was right on this one because yesterday I was like, it's got to like what would possess me to do this? I mean, it's got to be a legal thing. They must say in one of their contracts, they must think they've got the rights here to do whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah, and like on an earlier show, there was like an article from Screen Rant where they got insider information that was saying essentially this. But then that insider information got like rebuttals and people were like, we don't know if this person is actually real. Like, it's been such a fascinating thing to follow.
See, and this is why we need Jason Schreier still around. You know what I mean? He's got to get to the bottom of Cookstar.
Oh, man.
Know what's really going on. And yeah. Then on your final follow-up here, as we continue to report on things we've reported on, 3C is that Gamescom is officially going all digital. Yesterday, we talked about how the German government was like, hey, no live events at least through August 31st, which would have then forced the Gamescom's hand to then go all digital like they said they would. Today, they put out this statement. Dear Gamescom community, it's official. Unfortunately, Gamescom will, under no circumstance, take place on-site in Cologne this year. Just like many of you, we are disappointed because, as the Gamescom team, we've been working on a wonderful Gamescom 2020 for months, just like the many exhibitors. However, it is also quite clear to us, in the face of the corona pandemic, we must stand united. This means that we must all be considerate of each other and reduce the risk of infection. We are, however, already working at full speed on a digital Gamescom. It is, after all, the world's biggest event for games, and that's what it should be again this year. You can already look forward to how we will celebrate the best games and Gamescom together with you and millions of games worldwide at the end of August, even if it will only be a digital and not on location this time. Because one thing is certain, this year too, Gamescom is and will remain the heart of gaming. We will reveal more about this in the next few weeks. Until then, stay healthy and don't forget to hashtag stay home, play together, your Gamescom team. And then they end it with, regarding already purchased tickets, all paid tickets will be refunded. I get Cologne in my, where they actually do it. The convention center that I can't pronounce will arrange this centrally in the coming weeks. There is nothing further for you to do. Love it. What a great statement, right to the point, telling you what they're going to do. And then you look at E3 and ESA and they're like, well,
yeah, I'm surprised that it took them this long to commit to just doing a digital event. I think it was the same day E3 was canceled, was the day that they opened up ticket purchases. And I remember being like, I don't know why you think that you're going to be able to get that many people in one place by August. Because Gamescom is huge. Like, if you look at pictures of Gamescom, like, it's gigantic, right? It's like, I want to guess like 80,000-ish people that attend. I feel like last time I looked it up, it was around that time. It's probably changed since then. Like, kindoffunny.com/you're wrong if you know how many people attend Gamescom. But I'm saying around like 80,000. And there's no way you're going to be able to organize an event that big in 2020,
yep.
Right? Like, and so this is a good direction for them.
Stories is that there's like the guy, a professor from a university that I can't remember, was saying that, you know, no, he thought concerts, conventions, live events like that wouldn't happen until fall 2021.
Yeah, and like you, as far as their digital event, like I'm very curious to see how they go about it. I'm very curious to see what Jeff Keighley's opening night live looks like.
Good on
them for making this happen. I guess. I was gonna say sooner than later, even though I feel like this is kind of late for them to make this or not late, but they could have said this a lot earlier.
Hey, like, I mean, they did. They said that they were gonna try, and if they didn't, they'd pivot to all digital. I give them credit for being in front of the messaging early on, having to wait for the update. The one and only nanobiologist in kindoffunny.com/you're wrong says, "Blessing, you're way off." Gamescom had 373,000 attendees.
Jesus, I was way off.
Yeah, it's ginormous.
Maybe
it's
I think I got it mixed up with PAX.
For years, there's been this conversation of, will Gamescom ever overtake E3 as the premier event? And I think, honestly, this is their best chance, where if they move all digital and suddenly make it, hey, this is a worldwide event, they could fucking totally steal it right now. Speaking of stealing it, Blessing, I want to talk to you about our sponsors who are giving you deals so good, they're a steal.
Whoa.
Let's start with Hims, everybody. You've heard us talk about Hims. That's right, forhims.com, your one-stop shop for skincare, sexual wellness, and baldness remedies for quite some time. Of course, they are a fantastic supporter of Kind of Funny. They've been around an incredibly long time, and they've helped Andy and Nick keep their hairline, get some more hair, and have a great time with it. As I said before, Nick, sad cry face, when we were back in the office, right, had a conversation where he was just actually talking about how much he loves for hims and how it has actually helped him keep the hair he has. Of course, 66% of men start to lose their hair by age 35, and once you notice it's thinning, it can be too late. If you're like me, you have things you need to go to the doctor for. Maybe it is skincare, sexual wellness, or baldness. But guess what? You don't want to leave the house anymore because it's crazy out there. 4hims is a great solution to this, of course. What happens is you go to 4hims.com, and 4hims connects you with real doctors online that can save you hours. It's completely confidential and discreet. You answer a few quick questions, the doctor reviews it, and if they determine it's right for you, they can prescribe you medication to treat hair loss that's shipped directly to your door. Right now, our listeners can get started with their first month for free. Go to 4hims.com/gamesdaily. That's 4hims.com/gamesdaily. Prescription requires an online consultation with a physician who will determine if the prescription is appropriate. This offer is valid only if prescribed. 3-month minimum subscription. Additional restrictions apply. See the website for full details and safety information. Remember, that's 4hims.com/gamesdaily. Be like Andy and a little bit like Nick, but don't go full Nick. Never go full Nick. Up next, it's Quip. Quip, of course, is the electric toothbrush that all of Kinda Funny loves. If you didn't know, we've been using it forever. It's sad now because we used to always talk about the travel cover and I toss it in my bag and I take it on trips and then I don't go on trips anymore because nobody should go on trips anymore. But Quip is this electric toothbrush. Their new thing they've pivoted to because they're good folks is that if you have good habits, you're good, meaning that you need to brush your teeth 2 times a day. You need to brush it for 2 minutes each time, so 4 minutes total. You need to floss regularly and do all this different stuff. And let me tell you, when we first got the sponsorship from Quip, and Tim's like, you need to get a toothbrush from Quip. I was like, fine. And I got it and I brought it home. And then I was like, wait a second. I haven't been brushing my teeth for 2 minutes. Because Quip, of course, what you do is you turn it on, it starts vibrating, you put it in your mouth, and then you brush in quadrants. So for 30 seconds, you brush on one side, then it'll pause, then you switch it over, and you know how to switch it up that way. You go the full 2 minutes. You're like, 2 minutes is a lot longer than I thought it would be. But what's also great about Quip is that when you subscribe, right, they send you new brush heads and batteries so that you never forget to switch out your toothbrush head like I used to do before this. They also, of course, you can sign up for their floss refills, which show you exactly where to cut so you don't waste too much or use too little. And then, of course, it can give you the toothpaste as well. So basically, you can just put on autopilot all your dental needs, which I'm a big fan of because there's too much other stuff to worry about right now. Join over 3 million healthy mouths and get Quip today, starting at $25. And if you go to getquip.com/games right now, you can get your first refill for free. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/games. getquip.com/games. Quip, the good habits company. And again, another longtime supporter of Kinda Funny. Now, Bless.
Yes.
I can't wait to see who in the future are longtime supporters of Kinda Funny, but the future's so far away. If I wanted something more immediate, say what came to the mom and grop shops today, where would I go?
You would go to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah, it's a Thursday, so strap the fuck in, everybody. Billion Road comes to Switch and PC. Save Your Nuts comes to Xbox One and Switch. Drug Dealer Simulator comes to PC.
What a day.
Kawhi Dethu Desu comes to Switch. AFL Evolution 2 comes to PS4. Double Dragon 2, and Double Dragon 3 come to PS4, PS4 and Switch, and PS4 respectively. Renegade comes to PS4. River City Ransom comes to PS4. Fucking Blessings, Game of the Year Millennium.
I can't wait.
F comes to PlayStation 4. Can Androids Prey Blue comes to Switch. Galaxy Warfighter comes to Switch. Slain Valfaris Big Sugar Bundle comes to Switch. Pixel Cross Adventure comes to Switch. Lost Artifacts Golden Island comes to Switch. Finding Teddy 2 Definitive Edition comes to Switch. Later Daters comes to Switch. This is when Gary was talking about the dating sim in a retirement home. The Fox Awaits Me comes to Switch. Indie Games Bundle No No Grams Edition comes to Switch. Zed comes to Switch. Super Pixel Racers comes to Switch. Sentinels of Freedom comes to PC and Mac. Hellpoint comes to PC and Mac. Carton Falls Fortress. Defend Cardboard Castle comes to PC. And then Borderlands 3 gets 2 new limited time events, reading from Borderlands.com. This week, we have 2 new mini events, Mr. Torg's Slaughter Onslaught and Making It Rain. Mr. Torg's Slaughter Onslaught will increase the number of dedicated loot drops from Circle of Slaughter bosses. The Making It Rain event will increase in-game currency. Cash drops for normal, badass, and anointed enemies, which will come in handy when you're fighting the cartels in this month's upcoming patch. These events go live with the hotfix today and will end on April 23rd. The co-op loot drop event is continuing through April 30th. New dates for you. Somebody, wake up Barrett, even though he's probably awake. SpongeBob SquarePants Battle for Bikini Bottom Rehydrated is officially coming out June 23rd. Whoa. Star Wars Episode 1 Racer comes to Nintendo Switch and PlayStation 4 on May 12th, 2020. And then Void Bastards is coming to Switch and PS4 on May 7th.
I'm really excited for Void Bastards.
You could be playing it right now on Xbox Game Pass.
I could, and I started it.
And I respect it. I respect it.
I started it on Xbox Game Pass, but I fell off pretty quickly because I want to say other games came out. I think it came out the same day as Outer Wild, which I also
it was right around. Yeah, I was going to say it was right around then. Yeah.
But I want to try out Void Bastards on PS4 just because that's my preferred place to play. You know how it is.
Trophies. Ecosystem.
I mean, I was going to say PS4 controller. Final Fantasy
VII, just the original then?
Oh, yeah. I'm like 6-7 hours in.
Is it connecting with you now that you've played Remake?
100%. It's really? One of those things. Dude, it's wild. So I was talking to Timur Hussein recently. Because we were playing Overwatch. He works at GameSpot. They're a very small site. And he was talking about... I was asking him about the original Final Fantasy VII because we had both like played Remake, and he was like, dude, playing the original Final Fantasy VII now would probably feel like reading like a Wikipedia on Remake, in the sense that it feels so boiled down or feels so like stripped back compared to Remake. And yeah. So playing it, it's actually been blowing my mind because it feels like one, I appreciate Remake way more because I didn't realize I knew Remake expanded on the original Final Fantasy VII. I didn't realize that they expanded on it to the point where I am pretty much caught up to where the game to where Remake ends.
Okay.
In Final Fantasy VII. Like I've played through that whole portion of the game, and Remake is pretty one for one in terms of like in terms of all the beats in Final Fantasy VII. Like you go to the same places in the same order. Like certain areas of Remake that took like 2 hours are literally just two screens in Final Fantasy VII.
That's awesome, because I remember when we were talking about it on text, and Imran said that, and I don't think we talked about the spoiler cast, but he was like, dude, there's things that were just a loading screen that are like an hour in this game. I was like,
oh yeah, pretty much. Like it's pretty incredible, and I don't know how much I'm gonna play past to where I caught up in Remake.
Sure.
Because I'm curious to see. Well, I don't mind spoiling the original, but it's just one of those things where I don't know. I'm curious to see if this enjoyment holds up, or if the enjoyment was like revisiting the places I've been in Remake.
Speaking of enjoyment, you should enjoy things together with people. It's time for Squad Up. This is where people write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, giving me their username, their platform of choice, their real name, and why they need help in a video game. We read it. The best friends come and find each other. Everybody plays games together. Robbie Rob needs help on Stadia. He says in parentheses, it lives. His Stadia name apparently is Robbie Rob #4566. Hello there, KFBF. The future is now. The cloud streaming service is free for everyone for 2 months and includes Stadia Pro. So why not give the future a try by playing with some friends in Destiny 2, which includes both expansions and the season pass, and use the cross-save feature to bring your guardian and join a best friend on the battlefield. Join a BF on the BF. I see what you're doing there. Sincerely, your favorite warlock, Robbie Rob. Everybody, hit up Robbie Rob if you want to play Destiny. Robbie Rob, #4566.
I like that we're calling it hashtag now instead of like the pound sign, or like
we don't call the pound sign forever, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess the pound sign is really like for like pound sign was like 5 generations ago. That was like the greatest generation or whatever it was.
It was the greatest generation. Ladies and gentlemen, it's funny. Well, actually, you know, I got a recipe from Allie Hook, who we talked about in the Kind of Funny podcast this past week, and she gave it to me, and she put and also one hashtag butter. And I was like, I started to text her back of like, what? And I was like, oh, pound, 1 pound of butter. Got it. Okay.
Smart.
You know what I mean? Like that's a fucking pro move for somebody out there. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for You're Wrong. This is where people write in to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, telling us what we screw up as we screwed up, so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, and podcast services around the globe. Neil B. Farzad says Ethan Gatch actually wrote the story about Telltale's employees not getting severance. I think we might have accredited that to Jason, because we assume everything is Jason. Nanobiologist says, regarding the goofiness, the launcher announcement article states the following: but we also hope you'll find some fun at launcher. Not many people fell in love with gaming while pondering its Dickinsonian aspects. So we'll provide a steady stream of game reviews and tips. In many ways, gaming has replaced the weekly poker game or tennis match for younger generations. Even if the goal of those online gatherings is simply socializing, no one likes to lose. We've pulled pointers from some of the world's top professionals to help you win. Well, that doesn't sound like they're going to be goofy at all, Nano. That sounds like they're just going to give me tips and tricks. You know what I mean? And I'll tell you what, I follow that Janet Garcia girl from IGN on Twitter, right? That's a funny Twitter account. But see, she's doing tips and tricks on IGN, and then she's giving you the fucking hot cuts over on Twitter. So the follow Janet Garcia. That's where it is. Not the take so much. She's just fucking cutting people down. She'll be like, nah, this is bullshit. What are you fucking doing here? Your islands look like trash. And I'm like, you get them, Janet. Nanobiologist says Crysis came out on PS3 and 360 on October 4th, 2011. Thank you very much.
It came out originally, though, on PC earlier than that.
No, yes. But remember, my comment was, I remember eventually playing it, and I was like, correct me, on PS3. That was long after the time of everything that was going on.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I want to give myself a year wrong. I think the 80,000 number for Gamescom came from PAX. That's what I was thinking of.
Oh, well, we already got you on that. We already got you dead rights that you were wrong. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I was trying to figure out why I was so wrong, though. And,
oh, yeah. You conflated things, I understand. Ladies and gentlemen. That's Kind of Funny Games Daily for Thursday. Remember, you can stick around. We're going to do a post show, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Remember, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, ask your questions, get the show ad free. You can get the post show, but mainly you can stick around, support us. If you thought we did a good job today, go over there, kick us a few bucks. If you have no bucks to toss our way, I understand. You can get the show on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, and podcast services around the globe. Tomorrow, Blessing Adeoye Jr. will steer the ship with me. In the cope. I'll be his Gilligan. He's the skipper.
Yeah.
You get that reference? Do you understand that reference?
It's a Gilligan's Island reference, right?
It is a reference to Gilligan's Island. Thank you. Okay.
Great. That was on TV when I was in diapers.
I watched it in syndication.
I was barely out of diapers.
Well, yeah, it was syndication. It was whatever. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Kevin, go to the post show. Ladies and gentlemen.